Andre Hines. He's executive editor of National Reporter Publications. Andre puts together three different magazines, Bassin, Popular Lures, and Total Fitness. Andre Hines.
When I was asked to talk about what magazine editors are looking for, I asked around to some of my writers to get their opinions. Not surprisingly, one of the writers, John E. Phillips, had a quick answer. Just tell him, he said, that you don't know what you want, but you'll know it when you see it. Well, I thanked him for that answer, as clear and direct as it may be, but I told him that I had to fill up 10 or 15 minutes, and his explanation just wouldn't fill the time adequately. John is correct, you know. You won't ever sell an article to a magazine, any magazine, whether it be outdoor or other, simply by fulfilling the requirements in the writer's guidelines. I pride myself in producing one of the most thorough and complex writer's guidelines for Bassin and Popular Lures. Some of the writers call it my newsletter. It's more than 3,000 words long and describes my wants and needs in fine detail. Still, as thorough and complex as it is, it doesn't include all the fine points it takes to sell a story to me. So what do editors really want? Well, when I went to a fiction writers conference in Oklahoma last year, I was asked to speak at it at one of the sessions. I discovered to my horror that the other editors speaking at the conference wanted clean copy. Well, clean copy means that they wanted good 100% rag stationery, inch and a half margins around the letter quality type. They didn't want any of that silly dot matrix type or anything like that. They didn't seem to care about the quality of the writing at all. They just talked about having these nice clean white sheets of paper and talking about how bad dot matrix type was. I must have sounded like a real rebel when it came my turn to speak. I told the writers in attendance that I didn't care how the copy looked. They could write it with Crayola crayons on the wall, tear down the wallpaper, fold it up, put it in a box, and mail it to me, for all I cared. I'm not looking for clean copy. I'm looking for clean prose. Now, I wanted to make sure I was using the word prose in the correct content, so I opened up my dictionary, something a lot of writers don't do, and looked it up. According to Webster's New World Dictionary, prose is simply ordinary writing. Yes, I decided prose was the correct word. That is, I want good, readable, ordinary writing. Now, you might be wondering if ordinary writing isn't the same as dull writing. No, it's not the same. An example of dull writing is writing that doesn't take you anywhere. Here's the lead of a story by a published outdoor writer intended to be a feature story on a fishing tournament. It was Saturday, November 9, 1985, at 7:20 a.m., as the sun began to climb behind the desert mountains surrounding Lake Havasu in western Arizona. This was the site chosen for the Operation Bass Red Man All-American Bass Championship. It was the culmination of 94 tournaments held in 24 states, and from some 19,000 entries, the field had been whittled down to 39 qualifiers with a wide variation in ages, occupations, and backgrounds. One common goal among them was the dream of being the 1985 champion and also to pocket $100,000 cash. The Operation Bass tournaments are geared primarily to weekend fishermen. The entry fee for each one-day tournament is $50, and the tournaments are always held on the weekends. That was the lead. As good, readable, ordinary writing, it stinks. Other pet peeves of outdoor editors include the Me and Joe story. The quintessential bad example of a Me and Joe story is this. When Joe picked me up on that fateful Sunday morning, the sun was just peeking up over the mountains. In anticipation, we wolfed down bacon and eggs while Joe kidded me about my terrible coffee. "Don't worry, Joe," I said. "You'll think it tastes like $1 million after you've been sitting in that old duck blind for a few hours." Joe laughed, I laughed, even my Labrador pup Sinus laughed. Here's the second paragraph. Joe Blunker is a foreman in a polychlorinated biphenol plant in Duluth, while I'm a sales representative for a small monkey wrench firm in nearby Sheboygan. Joe and I have been fishing and hunting together for nearly 30 years, and outdoor editors see this kind of story nearly every day. As an aside, let me mention a particular pet peeve. That is the fine line between product mentions and selling out. Mentioning products is a necessity in outdoor writing. Catching a bass on a Bagley DB3 is very different from catching one on a Big Bud, even though both technically are crankbaits. However, when I took over as editor of Bassin, then called Pro Bass, I inherited some ancient, unpublished articles from my predecessor's predecessor. I returned one such article, bought 3 years earlier, to its author and requested that he make any needed updates. He updated it all right. He changed the manufacturer of the depth finder he used from Lowrance to Humminbird, changed the boat motor from Johnson to Mercury, and the boat from Skeeter to Ranger. That was the extent of the updates of the story. When I got the manuscript back, I penciled out all the changes and ran it without product mention at all. That is not to say, however, that descriptive writing about a particular fishing trip, you get up early in the morning and go fishing and you mention products, that's not to say that kind of story is bad. Some of it is very good. In a recent issue of Popular Lures, Bob Bledsoe led off a story about Costa Rica in this way. The sun had yet to peek over the Atlantic Ocean when we crossed the bar of the Colorado River and bounced through the breakers beyond. Gilbert Cholet, my guide, eased the 16-foot John boat over the swells while he stood erect, searching the water around us for signs of rolling tarpon. There was little visible activity, but we decided to try the spot anyway, since it was usually productive in early morning. Cholet immediately hooked a 12-pound yellow-tailed jack, which bit his lure in half and fought hard for several minutes before it was gaffed and jerked into the boat. "Let's move over there," Cholet said after the jack was boated, pointing to a patch of breakers about a mile down the beach from where we started. He cranked the outboard to life, and away we went. Flipping the bail on my Penn 650SS spinning reel, I made my first cast as the boat coasted to a stop between swells about 60 yards from the beach. I'd barely closed the bail when something slammed into my red and white mirror lure and nearly jerked the rod from my hands. Hit him," Cholet yelled. "Hit him hard." 3 times I jerked hard on the rod, hoping the hooks would penetrate the tarpon's bony mouth. One doesn't catch tarpon. The popular term is to jump tarpon. There's good reason for the expression. Tarpon are noted for their acrobatics, which usually include several thrashing, dancing leaps above the water's surface during a fight. They're known for their maddening ability to throw a lure. Often it is because the lures, even those with freshly honed hooks, don't get a good initial bite when the hook is set. The result is that far more are hooked than are caught. Although some could argue that that story is just another me and Joe story, I think you can see that it's much more than that. The lead brings you into the story by making you picture the scene in your mind, a beautiful picture. That single paragraph about jumping tarpon tells you more about the complexity of catching tarpon than some entire books on the subject. There are even 2 product mentions, the Penn 650SS reel and the red and white mirror lure, but these product mentions aren't just tacked on for the sake of pleasing an advertiser. They are there to carry on the story. Without them, the story would be incomplete. Every outdoor editor has his or her own pet peeve. When I told Boyd Pfeiffer 3 years ago that I didn't like the word etc. tacked onto the end of a list of words, he must have apologized for 20 minutes. Bob Bledsoe, who was my predecessor at Basson, was listening and told Boyd not to worry about it. He used etc. all the time. Janet Mell, former editor of Cast and copy editor at Sports Afield, refused to use the word lunker in her magazines. To me, the word lunker is a vital part of our cover headlines. I doubt that you could find a cover of Basson without the word lunker on it. One thing that I've discovered since taking the job at Basson is that outdoor writing is not a buyer's market, it's a seller's market. Some of you might be surprised to hear me say that, but it's true. Never before have there been so many markets for outdoor writers. If you can't make it to the regular pages of the Big Three, there are still the high-paying regional sections. There are national fishing and hunting magazines, regional fishing and hunting magazines. Every state has one, maybe 3 or 4. There are newspapers, radio, TV, books. This leaves magazine editors at a bit of a disadvantage. Although all of you know about Outdoor Life, Field and Stream, Sports Afield, I would bet that only 25% of the people in this room had ever heard of Basson Magazine before today. And as outdoor magazines go, Basson is pretty big, with more than 250,000 subscribers. Let me tell you that if you're not writing for Basson Magazine, or Peterson's Hunting, or Sporting Classics, or Outdoor Life, or your local newspaper, it's not necessarily the fault of the editor in charge. You have to go out and seek out these markets. It is vital that you take the steps needed to become a better writer. Strunk and White's Elements of Style is a good start. It's only 75 pages long, and it'll tell you more about writing than all the classes you took at school. All writers need a dictionary, not the nice, leather-bound kind that you keep in the living room to impress your friends, but a paperback, dog-eared one that shows you've been using it. Having a spell checker on a computer is nice, but it doesn't tell you what those words mean. For you, the outdoor writer, the key to selling articles is writing and rewriting articles. learn the rules of grammar and the pet peeves of the editor in charge. So what do outdoor editors want? As it turns out, John Phillips' answer, "I know it when I see it," isn't far off the mark.